the foundation of the house for us.
No, Ted will go figure out something to do while you're doing that.
You've been marching, Ted.
Anybody claim this cup?
Oh, that's mine. I'm sorry.
Just bit it.
Wrong end.
I got confused. Ecclesiastes 12. Okay, we studied yesterday verse 3 and 4. And we found out that it all refers to, it's an aspect of man, a parable or a metaphor for different things of man. The door shall be shut in the streets, and the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. And this is all talking about the denigration of man with age. And so he shall rise up at the voice of a bird. It means he shall be startled even by the voice or the sound of a bird, because he thinks robbers are coming to get him, or that whole kind of thing. And the daughters of music shall be brought low. The daughters of music are the lips. So you lose your whatever ability you had. Some of us don't have to ever have to worry about that one, but we'll lose whatever ability we had to carry a tune. And when they shall be afraid of that which is high, that's obvious. Fear shall be in the way. In other words, they'll be afraid of anything they don't understand. And fear shall be fears in the way, that whatever way they're going, there's fears there because of the age. So the bottom line of all this is that nothing that we do, we can think we have improvement if our parameters of either circumstance or time are sufficiently short or brought together. But any honest look at life, we're really going downhill. Right? And some of us know it better than others. So the idea of still going up to the mountains for your sustenance and ideas, or living in that place which never brought you any life anyway, becomes increasingly silly.
This thing here, this daughters of music, just knocks me out. The fact that that can be your lips says to me, which is part of what happened last week, the idea of you have a definition for what things are, and you're locked into that. You can't see outside of it. And then they come along with daughters of music, meaning your lips. It's like it's so...
Well, these are idioms that were common knowledge in the ancient times, but that's why you have to study you can't just read and then put your own definitions to this.
Yeah.
These are common, well-known idioms at the time this was written.
Yeah.
Whether it's the nose or the cloud or the sun or the moon or all of these things, they're all aspects of your life. But you'll never know that because you'll just make up some crap. And the almond tree shall flourish. It's the only thing that's flourishing. The almond, the almond nut is what it says. And it's that bone that we talked about that I didn't study because I thought John was going to explain it when he got here today, because he's got the notes and I can't find my notes. It's a bone that they believe that all of the resurrection in life eternal would spring from. And it's the hardest bone in the body, and it's somewhere on your spinal column. I think it's at the base of your spinal column. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of references to it. It's called Messiah's bone, and the age of Messiah's bone and the hereafter bone and the Olam bone. And, but there's obviously an English name for it, but I can't remember.
Okay, so the
bone of contention.
And the grasshopper shall be a burden. All right. Remember we studied yesterday about Hadrian. We read about Hadrian when Rabbi Joshua and Hadrian had this discussion. The grasshopper shall be a burden. Shall be a burden. There's just one word. It means shall be drug along. I mean, and it's the and again, we can't see this. Therefore, we make grasshoppers or helicopters or something, but. In the metaphor for grasshoppers, it was one of the stages of man. And so in the New Testament, when Jesus said, "I am a worm and no man," in Psalm 22 it says, "I am a worm and no man," which is the crucifixion psalm. And so the idea that grasshoppers, and we've studied this many times when we studied the plagues. The grasshoppers are a type of the human race. They're going all-consuming, consuming everything in their path. And remember when the plague of grasshoppers came, or locusts, which are just another type of grasshopper, there were there were hundreds of millions of grasshoppers that would move over, acting as if they had one mind, but they weren't doing anything constructive. Like the ant and the other animals that we are told to look at, the grasshoppers consume everything in their path. They're totally and completely destructive. So, what it's saying here is that but the grasshopper shall be a burden. It's what happens is your very nature, your very flesh, your very being. Is a burden to you. You long to put off the body of sin and death, but you don't have any choice unless you know Christ is in you. So even your very being becomes a burden. We must, what does it say? Go to 1 Corinthians 15. We could read the whole chapter, but let's just start in 52. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. And again, changed is metamorpho, transfigured. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. And Paul talks about how he longs to put off the body of sin and death. So, and again, you don't really want to do that until you find out how stupid it is. You constantly want to try to improve it, or at least imagine that you're doing it in your mind. So you pine for the fjords, or you're pining for a former girlfriend, or some imagined love that you never had. It's just goofy. But in reality, the whole nature is a burden that you appear to be dragging along. Anybody want to argue with
me? There's one in there, something about put off this mortal coil.
Something like that in Shakespeare.
Yeah, no, I think it's in my thinking.
I don't know.
Don't get him started, man.
You see how quickly this it's not, but with Harry, it's not the pain of his flesh, it's the pain and burden of everybody else's flesh. See, so, but that's another trick that's played on old farts.
Some more than others.
Huh? Some more than others.
All you grasshoppers.
So are you speaking of someone in particular?
Hey, I'm not the one that people come up to in public and
extol me for how much good I've done. And how one that's not me.
That's not you.
You tell them if they do that, it's balanced out by the bad you've done. So you come up.
Well, I know. I told him I've never done anything good. All right. Let's go to Proverbs 6:6.
What's the proverb of the beast?
How'd you know?
He's got it on his wall.
No, it was 6:6:6. That's the proverb of the beast. But Proverbs 6:6 is also the proverb of the beast. Verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Now, the reason why I want to go here is because the idea of considering the grasshopper, that the human race is like a grasshopper, then we're also then told to look at the ant. Have you ever had an ant farm? Anybody? Anybody watched ants and all that? There was a program on NPR about it, about the ants the other day. But this guy somehow was able to connect something to the little ants, and he was able to generate. Thank you, whoever said generate, this pattern. He watched, like, how do ants know that you're in a picnic, right?
They come from all corners of the
earth. Right. Well, what they really do, it's like a Jackson Pollock painting. I mean, it's just, there's this random swarm of travel of all these ants, but they're all going towards this one place, towards the sugar or something that they... some type of sugar. But when you look at this these tricks and did it on a 3D basis, it's an elegant pattern that came out of what looked like to any kind of human being chaos.
And an eminently efficient search pattern.
Yeah. And so the whole idea of whether we're looking at ants or looking at geese flying and anybody doing anything by instinct, we see this kind of this thing that's going on that makes no sense to us because we think in terms of the isolated self and what we do. But when it says, consider the ant, O thy sluggard, watch how they're literally moving as one. And they build these incredible structures, those kinds of ants that are somewhere in Africa. They build these mind-blowing...
Skyscrapers.
Yeah. And just talk about instinct. How in the hell do these geese know where to go? Or any animal know what to do on instinct? Remember, we've talked about this many years ago when we talked about the pineal body in our brain that used to be considered the vestigial organ. And it was because it didn't have any purpose. And they couldn't figure out what it did, and now they know it does all kinds of stuff. But there are many people that believe that's the seat of instinct. But what we do is our self-seeking destroys the seat of instinct. And Peniel means the face of God. That's where Jacob wrestled with the angel, at Peniel. And so the whole idea of this perfection of God that is being manifest, and it doesn't look like anything. It looks like everything is going wrong. But the perfection of God is what we must consider. That's why it says, consider the ant, thou sluggard. And a sluggard, if you compare that, a sluggard is anyone that's still messing around with self-seeking because they're still asleep. Now, the The grasshoppers do the same thing. They act as one, but everything the grasshopper does is destructive. Like us. So I just wanted to compare. Also go to Job 12. Let's see. Let's go to Job 12, another beast thingy. I can't find Job. I'm kidding, I found it. Job is giving an answer to his nutty friends who are telling him to make a vow and pay it. And all that.
Oh, he's talking to Job.
Huh?
He's talking to Job.
Yeah. In verse 7, Job is acknowledging God's omnipotence. But ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee, or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this, in whose hand is the soul of every living thing, and the breath of all mankind? Doth not the ear try words, and the mouth taste his meat? With the ancient in wisdom, and in length of days, understanding. Anyway, it goes on and on with him as wisdom. So we're exhorted to stop looking at others to see the mystery of God, because we'll never see the mystery of God in people because of the fall. But wherever we look at the tree, look at the seed, look at the vine, look at it, whatever it is, that's where the mystery of God is seen. But not in our understanding, we can't find it there. And this is what it's saying. All right? Back to Ecclesiastes. We're in verse 5. 12, verse 5. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail. And it's specifically talking about sexual desire. And it's got this great, they talk about this other problem. It says, I don't know where this came from. I got it somewhere and I didn't write it down. Distant objects have become near. The eyes which used to see from afar cannot now see even near. The ears which used to catch a thing at first or second hearing cannot now catch it even after 100 hearings. Two have become three, i.e. the cane, in addition to the two legs. What used to bring at least temporary peace in the house has ceased. And it's talking about sex, which created at least temporary peace between a man and his wife. Now, we don't have time to start it, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. But can you understand that you know all of the stuff that we've read, and I hope I've proved it to you, that it's all about there are idioms or metaphors for the human condition slowly denigrating. The one exception was this almond nut that shall blossom, but everything else just goes is denigrating. Now, there is no one that doesn't know this. Even the youngest know it because they see the old. So, why then do we retain and continue to maintain this fiction? As I've said so often, if each generation didn't have a belief in eternal life, they would invent it. I mean, in reincarnation, they would invent it. If your whole theology wasn't until if it didn't come into effect until after you died, if any generation didn't have that, they would invent it. Because after the seeing of the eyes, there's never any improvement. Because you see the same pattern repeated over and over and over. So therefore, when the natural mind reads the scriptures, they say, then we sing songs about Beulah Land and what happens after we die, and it's about St. Peter meeting us at the gate when we die, and all that other comic book theology. Because we can't, as long as we're locked in the body and pay attention to this mind, this flesh, we can't even conceive that we are in eternity now. So the natural mind cannot understand the spiritual things. It's not, because all it can do is add the spiritual things to their natural understanding. And that's where you get these weird theologies of, you know, who knows what. And then the most idiotic to me is, well, I'm going to live on through my children. No, you're not. They're going to forget you. Well, I'm going to live on through what I leave to humanity to do good. No, you're not. What, are you going to have your name written on Benny Hinn's prayer room in his plane if you give him $10,000? Well, the same is true. Well, I'm going to have my name written on, or I'm going to build, and be, this will be called the Rockefeller Center. So all my heirs can have a false ego, because look at what my relative did. The whole thing, our Rutledge's, John Rutledge's whole family, mother especially, was totally consumed with genealogy. And John is got royal blood. Well, so what? Still, you know, this applies equally to the highborn and the low. So why do we continue in the fiction of our belief systems? Why do you continue in these fictions of hopes and dreams and ideas that things will be better and you need to do this in order to get that? It's a fiction. And if there's anything we've learned from all of the last few weeks that we've been studying Ecclesiastes, it's that if by your silence you've agreed with everything, even if you haven't said anything, then you got to face this. You got to face the fictions of these seven mountains of your mind. And the fictions of anxiety and the fictions of haughtiness. Peace. You only have one hope. The resurrection. And that's not going to do you any good unless the resurrection is in you. Now let's look at this one scripture that's always the test script. 1 John 4. Beloved, believe not every spirit. Anybody there yet? Somebody give Miss... you got your own Bible. It's way in the back. 1 Peter and John. 2 Peter. 3rd and 4th Peter.
Yeah, I had to hit the...
Go backwards.
1 John chapter 4. Verse 1. Beloved, believe not every spirit. And again, a spirit is just something that's without body. So what do you believe? It's mostly talking about the spirit, the ideas, the things that your mind does.
This doesn't fly in California.
Huh?
This doesn't fly in California.
Or those that came from California. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try or test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know you the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of anti, or instead of Christ, whereof you have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world, therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Now the point of this is that it's not, forget what's anything external. It's what happens to you internally on a second-by-second basis. Do you believe the spirit that tells you that something is wrong? Do you believe the spirit that's telling you you have free-floating anxiety? Do you believe the spirit that's telling you that that somebody is, you got to judge somebody? Do you believe the spirit that's telling you you've got a good idea? Whatever this is where the tire comes. This is where you find out. This is where you live. But try the spirits to see whether they are of God. If it confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh, then everything is finished, everything is perfect, nothing is needed, nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. But all the other voices, all the other spirits, continually tell you that, well, something's wrong, this is going to happen, this is God, blah, 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 blah. And so the question is, do you hear his voice? Do you know his voice? Would you recognize his voice if you heard it? My sheep hear my voice. It's certainly not my voice. It's the voice that confesses that he is come in the flesh, that he is Lord of lords, that by one offering you've been perfected forever, that everything is perfect. And all the other voices you hear are of the instead of Christ. They are of the God of this world. Can anybody say amen? Well, hopefully we'll get to Long Holmes tomorrow. What?
Don't rush it.
Anybody have any response? Any? We need somebody here to argue with me. Can you imagine all the voices that listen to this that argue? Or all the voices that are here that are silent that are arguing?
I was thinking about those spirits, that they all have to do with telling you where you will find life other than Christ. It's always, you can find life in this project, you can find life in this relationship, you can find life here. But in all cases, they all come back to what you can do for yourself. But it's all cool stuff because it makes you think you're going to feel good if you follow that spirit.
Remember, they will speak well of you when you do well unto yourself.
I did have a question from yesterday. You had said that there were people at Baylor who had said that you had done so much good and helped so many people.
No, there's just one man that said it.
One man. And your response was,
I've never done anything good.
Never done anything. I wonder if that gentleman had said, Ellie, you've done so much bad.
Yeah. What would you I'd say? Agree with him.
No, but I... But if man cannot do good or affect people positively, can man not? So therefore man doesn't, even if we do bad, we're not.
In order to judge whether it's bad or good, you have to be on the judgment seat.
So
It's not about that. It's not about that. You're playing the wrong game. Now, how do you talk to people? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't do that too well. So. What?
The man was a demoniac.
Take a big guy. And take a big guy and help in the kitchen.
Thank you.